Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the 905er podcast. And today we have a 905 roundup and a special look at the Greenbelt documents that have been released as a result of Freedom of Information requests by Environmental Defence. So this kind of leads on from our interview last week with Tim Gray of Environmental Defence, and a look at the documents that they got as part of their legal process that otherwise would usually be not accessible to the public. And the interesting things that they say about what the province has been doing with the planning process in the run up to we're calling the Greenbelt scandal, but just the general planning scandal that's been going on in this province. So Joel, you've been doing some digging into the documents. What were your impressions?
There's a lot here, and kudos to Environmental Defence and to EcoJustice for putting this out there. It's just shy, I think, of 7,000 pages of documents. And yeah, so it took me a while just to kind of go through and peruse some highlights from it. But what got me was it's kind of like a pulling back the curtain on the development process and realizing, you and I had always thought that the development process was developer put the plan for a plot of land to the municipality. Municipality says yay or nay based on the plan, and that any appeal could go to the Ontario Land Tribunal, and they would eventually rule 9 times out of 10 in the favor of the developer. We thought that was the process. And this kind of revealed, not under this government, that's not entirely accurate. Basically, that the minister and it looks like the premier's office were hip deep in giving favors to people who knew how to talk to them right. There's a whole industry of consultants that, instead of working to influence policy, just to get on the Rolodex, on the speed dial of the minister or premier's office to say, I want this specific plot of land changed for my client, my customer, whomever. It was very much an ad hoc piecemeal approach to development, which has its own problems. Other journalists, you know, the Narwhal and the Toronto Star have done, they have more people to kind of do the deep dive into the 7,000 pages. It was just me on my own, so I'm not going to go into the he said, she said gotcha moments of the back and forth emails. But I kind of get you my overall impression is that this government is policy phobic or I guess process phobic on designing something, and it explains kind of where we are now in the development process and the housing, and where we are in the housing crisis, in that they kind of squandered the last 6 years, I would say, in possibly redesigning the housing process or to address the housing crisis, to get shovels in the ground and stuff built. Instead, they decide on this ad hoc piecemeal. My buddy comes to me and says, I want this plot of land taken out of the green belt, or I want the designations taken away for me to use. And that's been kind of how they processed it. I mean, the very first PDF file that we opened, you look at it and immediately it is just letters from the Steve Clark at the time, to various clerks of, you know, Halton, Peel, Hamilton, Toronto, other jurisdictions around the province, basically saying, I'm exercising my power as minister under the law to overrule your official plan, and I am making these changes. And then immediately after that is the correspondence back from the clerk saying, basically, whoa, 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 time out. Wait a minute. Like, we should have a conversation. This came out of nowhere. And that's kind of been, you know, that's the relationship that this government has decided to have with municipalities, not just in the 905, but in Ontario at large, which we will go into later in the episode. But that's kind of the crux of why we think the housing crisis is not going to get solved underneath this government.
This is Charles Adler. After a few years of working on radio and television, The Charles Adler Show has evolved to a natural place in 2023. YouTube, podcast, and open RSS. You'll hear the show as it always has been delivered, concise, with context, clarity, and empathy. And as a bonus, the guests will be natural-born storytellers who won't fear telling stories that are personal and emotional. They won't fear uncomfortable questions. Most important, they won't fear me. Follow me on Twitter at Charles Adler and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
It's really, yeah, I mean, it's like you say, it's the contrast between how it's supposed to work and how it's actually working. And I remember back before 2018 having the kind of impression that in certain areas the province had, in effect, you know, this is before the PCs, this is under the Liberals, that in certain areas, and that was basically in the downtown urban growth centres of suburban Ontario, the province had in effect taken planning powers away from the cities in any real sense and taken those to the province. And I felt that many people felt that that was wrong in as far, you know, in the extent to which it had gone, although the intent behind it, which was to sort of encourage downtown development rather than sprawl, was good. And but what we're seeing here now is that, you know, that kind of process, which had a at least a plan and a kind of idea and a theory behind it, has now gone. I mean, the impression you get from these documents is just of a chaotic kind of scattergun approach, where the minister is simply responding to requests from people. You know, people saying, "I want to build on this," and he's like, "Sure, here's a letter." Boom! We're going to build on that. It's just all over the place, isn't it? That's the impression you got, I think. And
well,
my kind of more superficial sort of look at it is getting that impression too.
There's a perfect example that I as listeners of this podcast know, I live in Burlington, and so I was curious what was happening in my backyard. And there's an area in a neighborhood here in Burlington called Aldershot, and there's a plot of land called Eagle Heights, which it's a section of undeveloped land. It's very much rural land, kind of inside Burlington's boundaries. Just to kind of set the image for you, if you're listening, the municipality has been trying to keep it as a rural natural heritage system, because there's an endangered species, a gecko or a salamander or something like that.
That Jefferson lives... salamander, I think.
If I'm sure, why right. not? Yeah. Yeah, but they live in there. They live in there, and it's a big thing. It is what it is. But they seem to make their nests kind of in this area, and so there's not really a big push to carve it up yet. Whereas the owner of that land had been wanting to develop it and was pressuring the minister's office to change it as from a rural or natural heritage system to a settlement area, and using the argument that it would fall within the provincial employment zone to develop into like an industrial or a business park, presumably. This is still ongoing. Whether or not you want it, you can get into the nitpicky bits of if it does qualify or what they want. The point was, this had been going on for years, and it's just at some point somebody has to say, no, you can or you cannot develop this, or this is what you have to build on it. And instead of just saying, okay, we're going to work with the municipality to say, this is what the municipality wants there. Let's figure out what we can build there to make a buck, provide what is needed or not needed, you know, whatever the case may be. There's no decision moving forward. It's like, well, no, we don't like this decision. We're just going to go one step above you and get our consultant, because it was a consultant. That's another thing that we'll get into. There's a consultant was hired to basically petition the government, not for a policy change or a wide enacting, like, hey, you know, this law prohibits us from really building what's needed. It's very much a specific, this parcel of land, we need you to specifically change the designation and remove it out of boundaries or change what we can do on it, which is very nitpicky and very micromanagement of the housing policy from the provincial standpoint. And that's kind of the theme that you get from the documents. And then this example is not isolated to Burlington. This has happened up in York. It's in Vaughan. It is in Ottawa. It's Hamilton, of course.
It's happening Niagara, everywhere.
Everywhere.
And day after day after day, direction after direction after direction of, like, under our new powers that we gave ourselves, we can now just overrule everything you do.
Yes.
So we're overruling this. No kind of forewarning, no. I mean, some of the responses, again, and I'm going here, you know, you've been through this in more detail than I have, but some of the responses that just leapt out at me are people going like, what? You know, hang on a minute. The actual sort of feeling of shock that's coming back from municipal, and they know the powers that the ministries have. I think it's the fact that they were just, some of the cases, there will have been decades, certainly years, often decades of planning and discussion and council meetings and staff work, you know, staff getting paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, but going into a particular decision to make sure that the right decision is being made, to make sure it fits within all the various frameworks that exist for municipalities at the different levels. And along comes a guy and at the stroke of a pen, says, nope, that's going in the garbage. And you know, that we saw that
my buddy, because my buddy tells me that it's a bad idea.
Yeah.
You know,
and we need to sort of remind ourselves, because, you know, most people, the vast, vast majority of people, even people who work in local government, I suspect, think that local government is often a pain in the ass. The people, you know, the elected people are often not the best, let's face it. It's a frustrating business. I mean, my limited experience was of enormous frustration with the way the whole thing works and the culture that has developed. So yeah, it's odd that I would then jump to its defense, but we have to remind ourselves why it exists. And we have local government because you can't have a body sitting anything between tens of miles away and thousands of miles away governing at a, you know, kilometer level. You cannot govern at a distance in a precise way because you don't know what makes most sense for Niagara or Burlington or Oakville or wherever. Yeah. You don't know the ins and outs of it. You have to have people there who do know, who do the research, who do the work to make the right decision.
But that's what it comes down to with this, is that the level of micromanagement into the development process is hindering housing being developed. Like every guideline and rule of the system is able to be second guessed or overruled or rewritten in some cases, which kind of explains why right now in Ontario, like we're coming up very short in our housing targets to meet the housing crisis, because nothing's being built, because everything can be second guessed. At some point, you need to say enough's enough, no more debate, no more could we get more. It's no, you need to build this here now. We need you're permitted for 20 stories, or you're permitted to build on this plot of land. No, you can't get that neighbor, that section across the street. That's environmentally protected land. You just forget it. It's not on the books. It's not possible. You've got to build with what we got now. And that doesn't happen. This government doesn't seem to be willing to lay out. This is the framework. You build within the framework and you get it done. It's the framework is always, well, it's always a hindrance. It's always a nuisance. It can be rewritten. And when you have that, what we're seeing right now, and this is the reality, is when you have that attitude of these government, this is the bureaucracy and the rules that are written down are, none of them are useful. It's all, we should have laissez-faire approach to housing. This is what happens because, well, I don't have to build now because I can always wait further down the road. The other point that comes out of these documents is this isn't a unique problem to the Ford government. We've had, there's correspondence between clients or the between clients and the minister and premier's chief of staff office saying, essentially, clients have been petitioning the Ontario PC party for, since John Tory was premier, leader, my apologies, petitioning them to say, you're going to free up my land. This shows a history of a party that is very much at the beck and call of developers that, and it's not even a matter of, you know, trying to create a system that they can thrive in. It's no, we expect you to cater the system to our needs at the given moment, which is, again, dangerous and prohibits us from actually developing because you try and create a system that you just say, nope, you got to build, you got to put shovels in the ground. Well, I don't really have to play in that system because I'll just put money into the next campaign and I'll elect, you know, some other, once Doug Ford leaves, I'll elect somebody else in the Progressive Conservative Party to run on, damn those Liberal or NDP bureaucrats, they're clogging the system, nothing's getting done. And we start the process all over again. It's honestly a very depressing read in that the development industry doesn't really seem to be more interested in how do I put shovels in the ground as much as how do I maximize the value of my land for my bottom line. So I can say I've got so many assets on my books.
Yeah. This ad hoc process is chaotic, and it doesn't, you know, the whole drive of, well, not the whole drive, a significant part of the drive of the PCs was that, you know, everything takes too long to happen. So if everybody just comes to us and asks for us to do it, then it will speed the process up. But it doesn't do that, because what it does is, like, everything is appealable, or if it's not appealable, it's just MZO-able. It's right. Everything can be questioned. Nothing is certain. Everything is up for debate. And in that situation, you've got chaos, because why would anybody not ask for more? It's obviously going to make sense to always ask for more. Ask for more at EOMB. Ask more from the minister. Ask more, ask more, ask more. So no decision is ever made, because it's always like, oh, well, we'll think about that and we'll get back to you. If you have a firm structure, and I mean, again, I know I've mentioned this before, but my very limited sort of discussions directly with developers, the one developer I spoke to said, you know, what we want is certainty too. We want a structure. And then it's like, okay, I can build this here. Right. There's no ifs, no buts. I'll build it. The other sort of side to bring into this, if the things are constantly appealable and constantly second-guessable, then the whole market, you know, the actual economy reshapes itself to that principle. So the value of land reflects what people guess you can get for that if you keep on asking and keep on appealing, rather than what the zoning is for or what the irony of this is, when Rob Ford was mayor of Toronto, one of his things was the official plans should be the official plans. They should. Right. No, I mean, obviously Doug and Rob are very different people, but
well, no, but I think it's all malarkey. I think. I don't trust the Ford family to give me an honest answer to anything. There was one addendum or just a piece that that caught my eye that I really want to highlight. And it's that in those letters to the municipalities to say, hey, the minister's changing or overruling decisions. One response was from the Six Nations to the minister. Basically, I'll summarize it as best I can, but basically saying they feel that their territory is being encroached upon by developers, which we have seen, and we've talked about before in the podcast. The issue of Caledonia is basically that of developers saying, well, I want to keep building out rather than intensify. And so they're forced to face the fact that those boundaries that the province is saying we're pushing out are going to encroach on the Six Nations traditional territory. Not to mention, they're pointing out the fact that, yes, they have treaty rights to fish and hunt in the rural lands in the Haldimand Track. Just saying, nope, we're building for the sake of building and municipal boundaries be damned. Their argument is that they feel that their land, their treaty rights are being violated by the expansion of municipalities into their traditional hunting and fishing grounds. Now, I'm not going to get into the nitpicking, it's not nitpick, that's the wrong word, but I'm not getting the minutia of that, you know, whether or not, okay, is this actually within lands? That might be a court battle. But the simple fact of they're saying, you're not consulting with us. In the spirit of a truth and reconciliation, you would think that the Ontario government should make sure that they're consulting adequately with the First Nations of Ontario so that they can we can get better policy that way. And they're not. And I thought that was something that's not really being reported. The environmental concerns that the First Nations have on the preservation of their lands, their waterways, et cetera, are just not being addressed in this mad ad hoc system, as they wouldn't be. I mean, that's the point of the system, is to preserve environmental environmental lands, watersheds, waterways, all that kind of thing. That's what really this is about. And this ad hoc way just overthrows it. Cause yeah, eventually you can't build on water lands. That was something I thought should be pointed out, because I don't really hear about that a lot in other news sources.
It's almost, yeah, it's important. It's definitely, I completely agree. It's definitely important that any kind of respect for the First Nations role in all of this is just relevant to this kind of process. It's just like, what can we build on? Who wants to build on something? React. And of course, yes, the First Nations are going to come absolutely nowhere into that kind of discussion. It's disgraceful, but it's so expected that we can hardly be surprised, you know. I'm just looking at something here, just to give people an idea of you know how this works. There's a whole bunch of emails back and forth about changes to the urban boundary in Peel. I've just pretty much picked this at random as we're sitting here. A big chunk of lands were being added to the urban boundary by the province. They're discussing the maps. There's a lot of discussion backwards and forth about whether the lands that are being added to the boundary should be colored blue or red. And obviously they went for blue. So, naturally. And then there's a letter, 6th of October 2022, from Giampaolo Investments Limited to Jennifer Lee at the Municipal Services Office for Central Ontario. Apologies, that's who it's from. It's to Jennifer Lee at the ministry. As they say, oh, we own some land on 13921 Airport Road within the town of Caledon. These are designated general agricultural area under the town of Caledon's current official plan and A1 agricultural under the town zoning bylaw. So important agricultural land, A1 land. Mm-hmm. Now these would have been discussed and considered and planned within Peel and within Peel region and within the the city as well, under the town of Callan. These will be discussed and planned and considered for decades and decades and decades. Investment company, no, it's an investment company, not a developer per se. It's an investment company. It buys things as investments. Has gone, oh, look, these lands are right next to where you can build. They're rural, but who knows? Let's buy them. Let's take a flyer on it. Maybe we can get something to change. So they just write a letter to the ministry saying, you know, Cardiff's very important, growth, growth, growth. Oh, guess what? Look, here's a map of your 413 that you're building, and it's right next to that highway that you want to build. Don't you think it's a good idea to build on it? So they send that, and they send along a diagram. Theirs is red, by the way. I don't know. I don't know what that says. And the very next document is a ministerial map of that piece of land, you know, being zoned for. Yep, add this to the employment area. So, the direct sort of process of just write to the minister, ask for help, and help, hey presto, happens. And of course, it makes sense. I'm not, you know, the developer's just doing, well, the investment company is just doing what they're doing for their own best interests. But that's not supposed to be how it works, that you just, you know, absent of any kind of process, any kind of consideration of what's right and proper and best for everybody's interests, for the environment, for protecting intensification, for avoiding sprawl, all of that just completely out of the window, that's the system that we have now. And even though the green belt, you know, has led to this scandal and a whole bunch of decisions have been rolled back and reversed, even though that has happened, this is still the process that we now have because of the acts that happened before, because of the changes to the Municipal Act that already happened. So there's nothing to stop this happening again. It's just that people are saying, hey, look, this is obviously wrong when you've got developer writing to minister and minister making decisions. The minister can still make arbitrary decisions. He's just not allowed to make them directly as a result of influence from other people.
It, what gets me about this is how completely neutered and powerless the municipal governments are in this province, which I know this isn't the provincial sphere or anything, but we keep talking the dialogue on the national level on the housing crisis has always been those blasted municipalities blocking development from going forward. And I think that these documents kind of kick that argument a bit out the door, because it's very clear that rather than setting up a process of this is where you can build, this is what you can build, instead the province has micromanaged it to the point where municipalities don't have any power. Like why, you know, I look at the idea of we see the federal government, the current federal Liberals and federal Conservatives talking about how they're going to go after these municipalities and holding back funds if they don't make the right planning decisions to promote housing in their communities. And that's all well and good. But I think I look and say, like, the real problem here is you've got to get the province to get its act together and say, to create a system that it is just go, 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 not, well, can I get a bit more? Can I get a bit more? Can I get a bit more? I look at this and question, like, where do we go from here? And if I was the Ontario Liberal Party or the New Democratic Party or the Green Party, my argument is start laying out, this is how the system will work. We're going to consult, just this is how it will work. Come up with a system and run on that. Because right now the current system is, if you the current system is all handshakes and bribe money at steak and dough or at weddings. And who can get the table next to the minister or the chief of staff or the premier's office at a big fundraiser? There is no process. That is the way that development works in this province. And when presumably, even if Doug Ford is turfed out of power in the next election, which is only in 2 years, folks, so we still have a little ways to go. But if Doug Ford and the Progressive Conservative Party are turfed out in the next election, and we elect a new Democratic or a Liberal government to replace them, right now I don't see a big change in the housing framework. And it will be the developers will just say, do what they do. Okay, we'll go back to funding the Conservatives, bide our time, and maybe and just gum up the system until we can elect a new Progressive Conservative government who will instead just do this all over again. That's how I don't see a cycle ending unless the opposition parties present a clear plan of this is how we're going to change it.
Yeah, I mean, I was literally thinking about the same point, that the opposition parties, they're very happy. I mean, obviously, they're very happy to throw mud all day. And the mud is real mud. It's this government is corrupt. However, what they don't then say is like the process. I remember a phrase from Kathleen Wynne. It was one of the, some event or other that I was at, she said phrase, and it sounds like the most boring phrase ever, so I apologize, but to understand what it means is really important. She said, I've spent my life fixing bad processes, which sounds like processes, what the hell is that's just incredibly tedious. What that means is the way decisions are made, the process you go through to get from having an idea to actually implementing it is incredibly important to whether something succeeds or not. Bad processes lead to delays, hang-ups, the wrong decision being made. Good processes get swift decisions, swift progress, and the right thing happening. And, you know, like I say, it doesn't sound like something you'd want put on your tombstone, but it's actually quite a profound statement, I felt at the time. What we have here is no process at all. We have chaos. I mean, I was just on Twitter yesterday, and there was a discussion. It may actually be about the Eagle Heights thing, I'm not sure, or another Burlington-related piece of land. And the piece of land doesn't matter, but there was discussion about it, and the city has asked for an MZO on this piece of land. And kind of progressive activist types were saying, oh, it's a disgrace. The ministry has refused to respond and give an MZO on this piece of land. Because in this case, they want that. They think, well, yeah, MZO is the best thing for us because that will give us, in this case, perhaps a protection to a piece of land. So an MZO can cut both ways. Again, that's just not how it's supposed to work. So now we've got this, all these people still being employed by municipalities and by the regions and by blah, 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 to go through all this process of making a decision that then is just always under threat of being thrown in the garbage. But right now, there's no indication from the NDP, no indication from the Liberals that they would do anything differently. Mm-hmm. Other than maybe use MZOs a little bit less. But the power is still there, and that's just not good enough. I mean, we need to have a government come in that's like, we are going to fundamentally reshape the Municipal Act, fundamentally reshape the Planning Act to make sure that there is certainty every step of the way and that local democracy actually has its appropriate level of control, and that there's none of this second guessing going on. Most depressing thing of all, and everything that we do on this podcast, is that I never hear that from any party.
No,
I certainly don't hear it from bloody Bonnie Crombie. You know,
I'm looking at these documents as you know, as I said before, it kind of the curtain has been pulled back and we're seeing the wizard or the emperor has no clothes kind of bit. The question, my thoughts are, again, I kind of roll it back and I think in my head, okay, we're in a midst of a housing crisis, which we need to solve yesterday. And right now we're looking at these, at the process. I was reading statistics the other day saying that we are nowhere close to hitting our targets for housings in Ontario. And I look at these documents. This is the reason why, is that there is no process to just get shovels in the ground. Like eventually you need to say, no, the discussion has been done. You need to build on this plot of land. So many units, so many whatnot is needed. And if you're not able to do it, then you need to sell it to somebody who will. And that's just not capable in this process. And that's why we are not seeing the housing starts that we need, in my opinion. What we're seeing instead is kind of more of the same. This is the kind of how we got into this process that we're in now, is that we're not, the free market's not building the housing that we need, because it's easier to speculate on a plot of land. It's easier to go back to the minister and say, hey, can I get this designated as residential or free up the environmental protections on the land, because I can either hold on to it and it becomes more valuable and that I can bankroll on that, or I can sell it and make more money off of that. We're still in this speculation game in development, and we're not in the building game anymore. And we need to fundamentally shift that dynamic, as far as I can tell. Right now I wrote this note on my notes here: everything is possible, so therefore nothing is possible. If I was there's no incentive in the system to actually build. I can say I'll build all I want, but what I really want is my plot of land to be more valuable to resell, or to wait for this Highway 413 to come through, if it ever gets built, which who knows. But here's the thing. We only have, this government currently only has 2 years left in its mandate to get its act together and start building. I do not see a system here that is conducive to that. I don't see, this isn't a matter of tweaking around the edges. This is their fundamental approach to how to get development done in this province is a faulty one. It's broken. It's counterproductive. It is not clear. And it goes against their stated objectives, I should say. I don't know if they have enough time to come up with 2 years, to come up with a whole process of development, so that we're able to actually start putting shovels in the ground and start building homes and units that are family ready to move into. I don't know if that's possible in 2 years, folks. It's depressing note to kind of end off this episode on, but let's face it, like they have squandered 6 years of governing, and it's clear that they don't have an interest in creating a policy framework or a clear set of rules that basically it's like, here's the rules, step back and let it go. And eventually somebody's going to be told, nope, this is it. The buck stops here. You either build the units we need, or you sell to somebody who will. And they're just not willing to tell that to their buddies.
Leopard doesn't change its spots, certainly not this leopard. They've got caught with the hand in the cookie jar, so to speak, or asking for people to put money into the cookie jar, perhaps better analogy. But they don't accept that the fundamental process is broken, which that's the difference. That the process that they have put in place is still in place. Mm-hmm. The idea that basically all local planning is ultimately done by the province, not by anybody else, is still in place. You know, the direct correlation between a letter to the minister and a planning decision by the ministry is going to be more obtuse, let's say. They'll find a way to make it clear it's not, that connection is not so obvious. You know, and by the way, everybody, going through these documents, that direct correlation seems very apparent.
Oh, yes. Yes,
you know,
it
it's,
is.
It's, it, you can, there's the letter from the developer. There's the emails from ministry staff saying, this has been requested. We've missed it out from our planning things. Should we be adding it? You know, stuff like that. I mean, I'm paraphrasing. Those aren't the literal words, but you know, very much that's the implication of what's going on. Here's a document. Again, I'm just picking pretty much at random here as we're talking. October the 14th, 2022. Just a list of items. Devona Law on behalf of Rismi Holdings, a request. Development Industry, Urban Solutions, Corbett Land Strategies, Erden Burliss on behalf of Penta Properties. These ones are all to do with the Eagle Heights lands in Burlington. Urban Solutions on behalf of Avatar International. Parcel of land in the Greenbelt redesignated as urban. Settlement area redesignated from rural and natural heritage to settlement. Something be removed from the Greenbelt. You know, these requests going through and you know, directly going to, okay, here's what we're going to send to the municipalities next week saying how we're overruling their official plans. And it's a direct, this mm-hmm. all happened only a year ago. So, you know, this has all happened very quickly, and it's just page after page after page of requests for changes and then those changes happening. I mean, that's corruption, but that's still the system we have. They'll just obfuscate that correlation when it happens, and it will continue to happen.
And I guess that's where we're going to leave this episode on that cheery note. But it's a case of, you know, if you're an Ontario Liberal Party or New Democratic Party member, a member of provincial parliament who might be listening to this podcast, that's what's needed. And that's what you need to start campaigning on now, is that we need to fundamentally change the process and be transparent on what that process is going to be. Because that's how we got here, is this behind closed doors secrecy. This is what's been holding up our solving the housing crisis, in my opinion, we're still speculating on land, and we have a government who is invested in that speculation politically. So that's that, and thank you very much for listening to another episode, folks. We'll talk with you again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's it for this episode of the 905er. Thank you for listening. As always, you can send us your feedback, thoughts, and concerns, or ideas for future episodes to our email, info@905er.ca. We'd love to hear from you. You can help us keep the 905er going by financially supporting us through Patreon as well as PayPal. Visit us at 905er.ca and click on the support tab. As well, links are in the show notes for your convenience. Lastly, you can find us on social media. Search for the_905er on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. So long for now. See you next time.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.